Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gathers. We're in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read and who we like to read. Food for thought, if Cummy Lube was a podcast.
Oh.
Oh, no. Oh my God.
Honestly, yes, though, where is
we
the
will,
line?
Didn't we?
We will give you HPV.
Didn't
we, we will.
Didn't we at one point call Cummy Lube Santorum? Do you remember
that
this?
We did.
That was particularly, I think, with rectal
yes,
fluids.
With
rectal fluid. Santorum was yes. By definition, not just cummy lube, cum plus lube plus rectal fluids.
Yes. Fecal matter.
It's fully in Urban Dictionary. We can still say it.
Fecal matter was optional. Yeah.
Got it. Just fluids. Fluids in general.
Just anal rectal fluids.
Yeah, fecal matter is always optional. It is on the side.
Jesus is getting nauseous as we... carry on.
I'm just like, all of my life choices are flashing before my eyes. I'm just going to get us the fuck out of here. I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. I'm a reader, writer, former figure skater. Just kidding.
You little
I'm a poet, TV writer, screenwriter, and I'm a bitch. Thanks.
That is true. That is 100% accurate. I am Joseph Osmondson, scientist, non-fiction writer, and I'm not a tender queer. I'm a parboiled faggot.
Oh, love that. Parboiled.
I think you're a stale faggot.
Delicacy. I'm Fran. Yes. I'm a writer. I'm an editor. And while we were discussing Santorum, I was enjoying a delicious egg sandwich. So very comfortable
Ready.
With fluids of any kind.
Mm-mm. Oh, dear Lord. I'm Jen Michelle Norris, and I am a reader, writer, and a former figure skater. And I am still a bottom, despite numerous campaigns to make me otherwise.
What? There are campaigns?
What are their campaigns?
There are campaigns. Nearly every straight man that I talk to on Tinder, OkCupid, wants to be fucked by me. Ooh. And I am like, I am not that kind of trans
that
woman.
That is bad. That is chaser behavior. That is just like the biggest eye roll of like
100% chaser behavior.
Speaking of misconceptions, you know, or people trying to put things on you, there's also a campaign to label me as a bisexual, which I'm
what?
So confused
Who?
By. Like, what? I don't know. First of all, okay, this
First of all,
is
how
more
dare
hilarious.
You?
Yeah, the more hilarious one was when the term BIPOC started to emerge, and they were like, Tommy T. Topeko, a BIPOC writer, and I was like, does that mean bisexual POC? Like, how dare they? And then, like, some reviewers of some of my books said something about bisexual, and it was like, I think...
I remember that.
Yeah, and I was like...
Was it in the New York Times?
I can't...
Did the New York Times call you bisexual?
I think the wow. writer just, like, couldn't see through anybody else's lens but themselves, so they assumed right. that I was also attracted to women, and I was just like, I hope I'm not out here in these streets misrepresenting myself.
I am going to make a crowdfund, you know, one of those petition websites to make you be bisexual. We will collect petitions.
Change.org.
Signatures. Change.org to make Tommy Teebs Pico
Honestly,
bisexual.
Honestly, Teebs, I could see it. I could see it. Now, I'm not saying... that I started that rumor, but I'm not saying it either.
I feel like if you found the right butch woman with a leather jacket and tights who had an amazing karaoke voice.
I agree.
Okay. And
you wouldn't say
no. Does she skateboard too?
She absolutely skateboards.
All right, so. Well, that's...
And she's 6'2".
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Okay.
All right, I'll
take the strap. I actually fully had... I had a crush on someone in college who had that exact profile. They are now a trans man, so it all makes sense. Go. But I'm just saying, I truly, truly did. They walked into my first day of my sociology class, and I was like, who is that? And I was like fully on board.
I love, and I wish there were more queer spaces that had equal numbers of men and women and all different genders, but it is like one of my favorite things to view like someone who sees themselves as like a Kinsey Six, like a monosexual gay man, see like a butch cis woman, and like the masculinity turns them on and they get all like confused as though it's like short circuiting the brain. One of my favorite activities.
Let me tell you, I know we're going in deep right from the top, but like I have to say that the whole like honestly like the Kinsey's system is largely seen as flawed anyways. And like I remember identifying like as a Kinsey 5, and like I like the more and more I live my life, I'm like, I feel like I'm all over the place. You know, like I'm shockingly less gay than I thought. You know, I'm being facetious. Friend. Obviously, wait. Doesn't make you less gay, but like truly,
you're being chaotic. I can't.
I think I'm exhibiting kind of bi behavior. I'm not gonna lie.
Wow. As of like, wow. Welcome. TBD. Welcome to the club.
I would like to also posit, like, I'm imagining this person walking into Den's sociology class, and the sound that Den made. That Den's. I just imagine the bussy went.
That's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate. And there was certainly a sharp intake of breath. There was a gay gasp.
Yeah.
We've waited way too far into the deep end.
I've got the menu. Get Today we're talking all about tender queers as if we know what the hell that is. For our first course, Den is going to take us on a ride, I believe. Den, are you calling us a car? And for dessert, we end with one delicious bite. Mwah.
I'm feeling kind of peckish. Like, I think we should start the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little tease. Our uproarious appetizer segment, Amuse Boosh. And to amuse your booshes, Den has an impure thought.
That's right, I do. Okay, so, dear thoughties, you might remember that I think probably 2 seasons ago, I shared an impure thought about a hookup that I had with an Uber driver. And part of the whole genesis of that story happening is that I wasn't even particularly attracted to this driver. I went through with the hookup because I was like, this is going to be a great story. And this will never happen to me again.
And it was. It was.
It was research.
Yes.
It was research. You can write. You can write that Lyft ride off on your taxes because that was at work, baby.
It was work.
It absolutely was work. And also, like, the number of times that I have engaged in sexual behavior, even like way pre Food for Thought, purely because I was like, this is going to be a good story, like, it's probably too many. But I'm not ashamed.
Look, it's called being a writer.
It is called being a writer, and also being a hoe, and both of these things are valuable. Mm-hmm. So I fully did it because I was like, this is never going to happen. I had that first ride, that first Lyft ride.
That first ride.
Lyft or Uber, I forget what it was, but I had it, in which I sucked this married man's dick in the back of the SUV with the tinted windows by the side of the road, a block from my apartment. He pulled over right by where there was a fire hydrant, and I did this for the story. And at the time, Pose season 2 was airing. And so my friends and I, we would go to our friend's apartment, our friends who let me stay in their apartment over winter break when I was quarantining. Which it's this fabulous like penthouse on 42nd Street. And so they would host every week like a viewing party of Pose, and we would all gather, we'd go, we'd have dinner. It was super fun. And it would end late. And so I would take a car because I lived in Williamsburg at the time. So I was like, I'm taking a car back to Brooklyn. So I did it this one night. The following week, I was away traveling, I think doing Food for Thought stuff. I think we might have been at like Tin House that summer or something. So I was away. So I missed a week. I come back. I go to my friends for the next episode. So this is 2 weeks later. So 2 weeks later, I'm leaving my friend's apartment. I call a car. I get into the car. And the first thing I notice is this is maybe the hottest man I have ever seen in my entire life. He is like 7 feet tall. He is super thick and muscular. And this is July, so he's wearing just this tank top. And you should know, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show, I really have a thing for men who wear like chains around their neck, like a chain or a necklace. It just like, it really turns me on.
Dirtbag behavior.
Feels, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I love a dirt bag. Same, I love a muscular dirt bag. And he's got like the perfect amount of chest hair, like popping out in a little tuft, like from his very tight tank top. And I'm just like, okay. And
I've seen this clip on Pornhub.
Yeah, you, most definitely.
We've all seen this clip. And so I get in and I'm like, oh shit, I have this 30-minute car ride. Like, I'm not going to be able to handle myself. So I get in the car. This is one of those buildings where there's like a hotel. There's like a full driveway, like a full semicircle driveway. So he's pulled into the driveway. I get into the car. We get out onto 42nd Street. We get to the first stoplight. And he's talking to me, and I barely understand anything he's saying. But at this point, he's asked me, within like a minute and a half, he's asked me to get out of the car and get into the front seat next to him.
Oh, I'm sure he
yes.
did.
So I did it.
Oh,
I did it.
Wow. Uh-huh.
There was no traffic.
There was,
and then he let me take control of his iPhone so I could choose what music we listened to in the car
oh
as
God.
We drove.
Oh my God.
And I was feeling very gay, so I chose Madonna.
Which Madonna song do you remember?
It started with, so I don't know if people know this song really well, but it's actually maybe my favorite Madonna song. It's a tough call because there's so many, but this song Jump that she does.
Okay.
Oh, that's on the Confessions on a Dance Floor.
Yes, so it's on Confessions on a Dance Floor. I feel like, I think it was a single, but I don't think it was like a super popular song, but I actually just love it. I love
that
song.
Wait, so then what happened?
So, sorry. Anyway, so at that point, we just start driving, and he eventually wants me to put my hand on top of his hand on the gear shift, and he starts, like, rubbing my hand, and then he starts saying, so, what are you, like, when you get home, like, what are you, and keep in mind, he has a thick Turkish accent.
Ooh.
He's very, very thick Ooh. Accent. So he's like, he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't have plans. I'm gonna go to bed. And he's like, well, you look tense. Maybe you need a massage.
This is like, it is, God bless the Lord for hovering
yeah.
over you in good ways. Because every single decision you've made up to this point is like how horror films begin.
Okay, listen, unfortunately, the whole time I've been thinking about how hot this is. So safety has not been in my realm of thought yet.
This is like some Summer of Sam bullshit. Like,
yeah, yes. I'm like, I'm truly like, I am not turned on. I'm mortified. Yeah.
I'm both.
What's funny is that
I mean,
I'm
one
scared
usually
of everything.
Follows the other. Okay, let's be real.
That is true. Fully true. I'm usually scared of everything. I'm always like, this is how I die. Like, this is terrible. I had no fear. Maybe it's because the last one had ended up safe, but he had not. It had not, like, it had just been in his car. But I was not scared of anything. I was very horny. This also, I think I might have thought to myself at one point, this man is so hot that if I die from this, like,
worth
you know,
it.
Worth
no, regrets.
Oh,
no regrets.
Dang.
No regrets. So anyway,
I mean, I felt that way before. I also don't really want to live, so I'm just kind of like, oh,
period.
Sure, why not?
It reminds me of that Ali Wong joke where she's like, I don't want to die, but I don't know if I want to live.
Yes, 100%.
Yes. It was Ali Wong's second special that made me be like, I need to get over my issues and start eating ass. If Ali Wong can do it, so can I.
Oh, wow.
She read the first 5 minutes of that special. She read Bitches Who Do Not Eat Ass for Filth. And I was like, wow. Because I'm like, you have to eat my ass if you want to fuck me. Like, there's no other way. So I was like, wow, you wrote this for me, Allie. Thank you. Like, wow.
It's just a little salty, that's all.
And that's how Den got Giardia. Yeah.
Anyway, the only reason I brought it up is because her most recent special, she spent the whole time talking about how her husband is a freeloader cheat on him. And I was like, this is an exact projection of my future. Like, I'm going to create a Netflix special about how bad I want to cheat on my husband and he will divorce me immediately.
That truly is peak.
Anyways, Fran. You're about to give Roadhead while Jump by Madonna plays.
Yes. So the drive goes well. We're just flirting. We're listening to Madonna. He's rubbing my hand. Then he starts rubbing my thigh. But he keeps it pretty clean on the road. And he just keeps saying, and, you know, when we get to your apartment, you know, I'll give you a massage. I'll give you a massage. And I'm like, there's no way that any way that this ends, I'm going to be happy because I love massages and I love getting fucked. So, you know. So
that's such a Real Housewives tagline. Wait. Den, what was the name of your hometown again?
Cleveland Heights.
The Real Housewives of Cleveland Heights.
Wait, what was the name of the mall?
Oh, Beechwood Place.
No, the other one where...
Parmatown.
Parmatown Mall. Mall. The Real Housewives of the Parmatown Mall, bitch.
Parmatown.
I love massages and I love getting fucked.
Coming at you from the bedroom section at Sears in the Parmatown Mall.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The salad works at Parmatown Mall is all green jello and sour cream.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Anyway, so we find a parking space. We find, like, the easiest parking space that I've ever found in that neighborhood. One block from my apartment. We walk up. I, like, have to pee like a motherfucker. And I'm freaking out because most of the time, I'm just going to say I'm very regular. Most of the time I poop in the morning. I had not pooped that day. And I was like, now I have to poop with this man in my apartment because I want to get fucked. Oh. So it's all fine.
Oh,
we get into the building. We make out a little bit in my room. I'm like, give me 3 minutes. Like, let me go do this. I go do it. It's fine. I come back from the bathroom.
Wait, so you pooped?
Yes. So I pooped.
And you didn't shower.
I did a thorough cleaning.
You can do a thorough cleaning. I mean,
you can do a thorough cleaning. Okay.
But that's still, that's quite brave, I will say.
That seems like a Joe move to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it does.
It's not. It is not lies, a Joe move. Lies. No. You will not besmirch me thusly.
I will just say that I probably used like half a package of those wipes, those baby wipes. You know, they got the job done.
As long
done.
As you got in deep.
Yeah.
Get the little finger up, you do the little swirl.
I will say I did not actually make him eat my ass though.
Oh.
I did not.
Oh, there we go.
You don't have to do that every time you fuck me. And that's where I'll be like, we'll see. But anyway, I did what I had to do. I walk back out into my bedroom. And by the way, this is the bedroom that Teebs used to live in. This is when I lived in Teebs' old apartment.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Well, that if those walls could talk.
Well, the rats in them can.
Oh, most certainly.
By the way. Anyway, so I walk out and it was literally like something out of a film. I walk into the bedroom. He is sprawled out on my bed with his arms like behind his chest, just like leaning there.
Oh, that's hot. Mm-hmm.
Jerking his dick slowly. Ooh. I was like,
that's really
what is my
good.
Life right now?
That's yeah. a good
it was very
move.
Hot.
Yeah.
It was a good move. I was like, wow. So at that point, I mean, I just go to town, right? I just get on my knees. I give him his dick is massive.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like, his whole body is massive. I give him the best, maybe the best blowjob of my life.
Wow.
And I stop just short of him coming because I'm like, no, I want him to, like, fuck me. And then he picks me up and stands me on the side of the bed and bends me over and gets up behind me.
Oh, Den, you love just, to be picked up.
I love to be picked up. You know, I love to be thrown out like a little rag doll.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what I like. And he just goes to town, pounding me in like every position. It's all over the room. He moves me. I had this giant bookshelf that Teebs might remember. He pushes me up against it. And
I have been pushed up against that bookshelf. I have also been lifted up on that bookshelf. I feel
like that bookshelf did not consent to these sexual encounters.
The walls in that bedroom were purple. That bookshelf knew what it was getting itself into.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He moved me over by the window. And this is the second time I've been fucked through. We opened the window and he like bent me through the window, which was super, super hot. And I was like, I feel like neighbors can hear. This might be a problem, but I didn't care. It was fine.
Fun fact, I've also been put in that position on that window. And I told the person, like, I think, what if somebody sees us? And he was like, I don't give a fuck. And I was like, oh!
Period. Period.
I basically said the same thing. I was like, someone's going to see us. Because this is right in the middle of fucking Brooklyn. Like, there's buildings all around us. And he was like, I don't care. It was so hot. It was so hot. We ended fully on the floor. He was fucking me up against the door, like on the floor. But he fucked me for like a good hour and a half.
Too much. Don't
you,
like it.
I actually
you
don't
know, I like a
it.
Long session. I like a long session, as we
of
know.
Of course you do.
As we know. And anyway, when it finally ended up, what was like he came in fully dressed, right? Like fully dressed. He finishes, I finish, he gets up, he like pulls me up to my feet, sits me down on the bed, kisses me again. I did pull down his pants and give him another blowjob because I couldn't help myself.
Dead.
And then when he finishes, he just gives me like a sweet little pat on my cheek, grabs his clothes, was wearing only his shoes and his pants, and walks out. Doesn't need me. I mean, I was not in a position to. Doesn't need me to like walk him to the door.
He doesn't even
like
put his shirt on.
Doesn't put his shirt on. Just walks out.
This man,
fuckboy behavior. Fuckboy behavior.
Pornography. That was incredible. This man was an exceptional lay. Where is he now? Did you give him a good rating?
I do not know. And he gave me his number, but I never texted him.
Slash you lost
I was
it.
Like, I was convinced. I was like, this was a dream. This didn't happen. Like, this was a dream.
Babe,
but no, like, this did happen.
Babe, that's hot. I don't care about the danger. I'm team this man.
It was super hot.
I actually want to discover this man because he should be on OnlyFans.
Maybe he is already. Maybe he is right now.
I wish I could remember his name.
Okay, we're by the power of our Googles combined, we're going to find this.
Literally, all we need is for Deb to look at her Uber app. That's literally all we need. And by
actually,
by God's will, that will never happen.
From 2018, if I can even find the app. It was
also
the thing that made me feel like. Because I am always scared of everything and like I am super cautious, but it was one of the moments that made me be like, you know what? Sometimes you have to be wild and make bad decisions, and it is worth it and works out.
The difference between Den and me is that I would not have made that. I would have been too afraid of death. But if this man came over and fucked me that way, there is no way in hell I would not have like texted him the next day or the day after that and eventually tried to wife this man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I think he had a girlfriend or something. Like, I think that he was a very closeted Turkish immigrant. That was the sense that I got from the situation. But because the whole time he was like, I can't kiss you. Like, I don't kiss.
Oh,
that sucks. I love kissing.
I don't like that. I don't like that.
I mean,
which
if he's
normally
just gonna fuck my brains out, I mean, I could still enjoy that, but I do like to kiss.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't normally be into it, but I was like, you know,
if you are a man on Grindr that says no kissing, you better lay that pipe. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, you
Absolutely.
Have to earn a no kissing policy. Okay, because if you come in and you say no kissing, and you give us four pumps and you head out of there, I'm gonna be mad.
No,
I'm gonna be mad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you're gonna jump right over foreplay, like I need to know ahead of time that it's worth it.
You have got to be a 100%. Professional grade plumber.
Plum.
You know what I mean? Mario ass shit.
Say it. Okay. And that tongue better be hella talented
yes,
Mario too.
Mario ass shit. Let's a go. Yeah. Very
You need to eat that pussy like like your life depends on it if you don't kiss.
Wow. Well, Den, let me just say that was the juiciest. We haven't had an Ampure thought in a while. Thank you so much for the juicy, juicy thought story.
Yes.
Wow. You know, sometimes it pays to hook up with a driver.
I think it's time we got to the meat of our discussion, the thought process spelled T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
And Fran, I believe you have the meat this week.
That's right, dear thotties. Okay, I am going to start off by saying that earlier this month, Killing Eve, a beloved lesbian melodrama about an assassin and a detective that fell in love, aired its series finale. And let me tell you, the queers were not happy. With the death of, spoiler alert, Jodie Comer's Villanelle, the think pieces were abundant, okay? We got Gay Times, we got Them.Us, we got Pink News, Down Bad, like, reporting outrage. And, you know, a lot of these personal essays had fans calling Villanelle's death a betrayal. They talked about it as a failure to the community and that it was allegedly made to represent. And, you know, others said this was a reiteration of the barrier gaze trope, despite the fact that the show is about literal serial murderers. And much of this sentiment came from, you know, corners of the internet known otherwise as the tender queers. So although the actual definition of a tender queer is very murky, as is the case with any internet-y buzzword, tender queers are a class of folks on the LGBTQ spectrum that where performative activism is a kind of aesthetic. Tender queers pride themselves on being sensitive, and their feelings are prioritized kind of over everything. And so the word harm, or in the case of this, betrayal, are kind of thrown around a lot and very authoritatively in an attempt to problematize anything that irks them. And this, you know, can come with good intention. Sometimes these people are actually really trying to make good change in the world. And other times they're people that are saying that kink doesn't belong at Pride because it's non-consensual. They're often younger, but tender queers can come in all ages. The language is a little watery. It's imbued with therapy talk. They've kind of collected a lexicon of language built by organizers and used it for their own purposes. So we're all going to attempt to have a conversation about, you know, just this whole phenomenon without sounding obliteratingly old. But to start, do any of y'all have a story wherein you encountered the agony of a tender queer, or perhaps someone who you felt exploited social justice language to get their own way?
Yes. Although I think this person was probably like a proto tender queer. We didn't have that kind of language for it back then, but he was the kind of guy who, you know, if we left a restaurant, would always make sure to give his leftovers to like an unhoused person, and like seemed like like there was like a virtue about him, but then was a complete asshole to me, and I was like, wait, so how are you like this organizer, protest, etc., and yet interpersonally you're like the worst? And I remember at a certain point, like, we were in an argument, and I told him that he needed to take the relationship seriously, and the word that I used was you need to man up, and that was probably like not the best, but he spent a half an hour about why that word was abusive.
And we
would never actually talk about my grievances or like what I had to argue about. We were always talking about like my position, my or like my tone, or like how I was disturbing the space, and I was just like, man, fuck you.
You know, it's so funny. Tender queers are merely a jumping off point for this conversation. I think that they often get a kind of rap of being a particularly young generation. But I really do think that tender queer behavior, quote unquote, or however we want to talk about it or call it, just comes from anywhere and everywhere and has existed since the dawn of time. But like, damn, Teebs, like that really is a reminder of something that must be said activists and people that are, you know, really good at social justice and are incredible movement workers can also be
anybody
assholes.
Can be a fucking asshole. And you could anybody of any kind of ability or race or religion or whatever at any intersection, you could be all of those things and be an asshole. You could be an asshole. Anybody
yes,
can be an asshole.
Period. Mm. Period.
I feel like I think a lot about this time. I've had an ongoing fight that is more or less, I would say, dying down, because these people have been completely, I think, finally stopped being taken seriously on the left. But the dirtbag left, you know, the Chapo Trap House podcast people who are like so anti anyone but Bernie Sanders. I mean, they were the people calling like Elizabeth Warren a snake and like a lib and like it has all these crazy sexist overtones and they're overtly homophobic. And I definitely got in a quote, like quote tweeted by them. But the thing about those people on the dirtbag left is they had a podcast with like 500,000 weekly listeners. And every time they quote tweeted someone, your mentions were so much homophobic nonsense. And these are ostensibly people with whom I'm like aligned politically, but because I like Elizabeth Warren more than Bernie Sanders, because I think he's kind of a dick and I liked her policies, I suddenly was like, I was doing harm to real leftists and working class people. It's like this tiny disagreement over leftists. And this is like, this is lefty fraction nonsense that goes back to like, I mean, talk about problematic, but Monty Python has a movie, The Life of Brian, and there's this amazing scene in that movie where it's like different lefty factions just like yelling at each other, and it's like all like three people sitting in the Colosseum, and they're like, fuck you and fuck you, you know, it's just like they cannot organize together to do anything. And this has like been true of leftist spaces since forever.
Yeah.
But I definitely have felt that like, It's the purity test, right? Like, if you are not XYZ, agree with me on these things, you are doing harm. You are a lib. You're part of the, like, the order that wants to maintain the status quo. You're racist. You're classist. You hate working people. And it's just like, if you hold everyone to that type of standard, you cannot build coalitions. You cannot work with people. Your like, movement is destined to fail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's also
literally, I've seen it. I mean, I can't share details, but like, I've seen it from the inside of like other actions. Like, it really is like sad almost, because none of them can see outside of their own asshole to pause for a minute on the task at hand. Yes.
It's also really one of the things that feels really sort of disappointing about that, especially when it, like, I'm not really in those circles. I don't feel like I really see much of this or am exposed to all that much of it, except when we're in election season and when Bernie Sanders in particular is running. But one of the things that's also really disappointing about it is that it completely ignores the idea that as progressive thinking people and progressive leaning people, that we don't deserve choices. Like, that we can only have one candidate who represents our values and can be the right candidate, when in fact our entire political system is based on minimizing options and minimizing choices. That's why we have a two-party system to begin with. And so it's like, as people who are progressive minded, isn't it better for us to you know, especially when we're talking about primaries, have, you know, multiple candidates and potential representatives who can represent our interests, and then we can sort through them and figure out who are going to be the best people to politic in Washington, D.C., which is a reality, and get the job done. It's like, we deserve choices too, but instead it's like that thinking and behavior, it's like eliminating choice for everyone who doesn't agree with just me, and seizing complete control. And it's like, that's also not that's not what progressiveness is about.
It's like, you know, if you're, this is like illustrative of the party system, and we might be getting away from the main topic, but we can circle back to it. But it's just like, on the left, if you're not perfect in every single way, you That's are right. garbage. And on the right, unless you're the worst possible person, you're woke.
Yes, exactly.
That's, you know, so Teebs, I actually think that's even, I mean, I maybe getting away from the left and right of it all, but I think it was saying like that kind of what you just said, I think, is kind of one among characteristics of a very large class of people that we're trying to like talk about. So maybe it would be helpful for us, since the word genderqueer is kind of elusive and undefinable and like internet-y, and like mostly most people probably don't even identify with that. Like, what is exactly this behavior? Because to me, I feel like a lot of it is a failure to see outside of your own interests. A failure, I think a lot of times it's a self-involvedness that like transmogrifies into a this is movement work, you know? And I also think sometimes it can be a failure to understand the fluidity of movement work and how sometimes your goals change. And sometimes it's just a failure to understand the way that all justice has to shapeshift and all justice has to continue to like move and grow. Because you're so rigid in your belief system.
I have a feeling. So I feel like I'm the most seemingly tender queer person on this podcast.
Because maybe so.
Because I'm very sensitive. I cry all the time. I take things very personally. But I do think there's something new about the tender queerness. It's not it is a slightly different thing. And what the way that I view my definition of a tender queer is weaponizing one's own feeling to have power over someone else, right? I think a lot about the horseshoe theory of politics, which is that you can go so far left that you actually become fascistic in your thinking. And that's kind of how I view the tender queerness. It's like being so personally affronted by kink at pride. The kink at pride example is just the perfect example, right? I am not consenting to see someone in a jockstrap. Therefore, you cannot wear a jockstrap. So fundamentally, I'm arguing that I have control over your actions because of my feelings, right? And so it's a weaponizing of one's own sensitivity and taking, you know, it's, and again, I think that it's so tricky because as a person who was assigned male at birth, I've been attacked my whole life for being sensitive, like literally physically harmed for being so emotional. And so I hold my emotionality as something strong about myself. I love being an emotional kind of gendered queer person. But that doesn't mean that just because I'm upset, I get to go around controlling everyone else. That's the sort of like the difference, I think.
Well,
exactly.
You circled back to something that I was thinking about too when Teebs was first speaking, which is, to me, it's like ultimately when we talk about this sort of tender queer behavior or mentality, to me, what it basically is the adoption of the methods of like white women and white tears in conversations around race. In this context. So it's people who already like don't, the thing that like sort of blows my mind about it is it's people who, you know, sort of systematically speaking, don't have a whole lot of power in our society, taking sort of the tools of the master and using it to build power over other folks who are within their same sort of identity group. If that makes sense.
And it kind of uses the tools of the in-group. It uses the fact that we're trying to like be an ethical community that minimizes harm. Like we're trying to use transformative justice. And so it uses that language and it uses those tools actually to have power over. Because again, these are people who might not have a lot of power, as you're saying, Den. And so they use the sort of socially agreed upon language that we don't want to do harm, that we don't want to do this, but they actually are not doing it to avoid harm. They're doing it to yield power.
Power is such a key word, Joe. And I think that is something that like everyone, even like I include myself among this, like when we try to call someone out or when we try to have a moment of accountability or when we're trying to do something, you know, on our own that is like on behalf of movement work, you always have to ask yourself, where am I looking for power in this? Mm-hmm. Even if I am not thinking about that, like where am I trying to get my power back? Because I think what you said earlier about this group going so far left that it's fascistic at times, I don't think that's too extreme to say. Like to weaponize an entire system of beliefs to forcibly suppress your opposition is the definition of fascism. Correct. Like that's just like what you're doing. And obviously they can't be conflated. Obviously there's a lot of nuance and obviously this is a spectrum. We're talking about very extreme examples, but like there are also very not so extreme examples of this that happen in our everyday.
Yeah. I can't stop thinking about Sarah Schulman in this conversation because number one, she wrote a book called Conflict Is Not Abuse. And so just because you're upset doesn't mean someone's abusing you. There's a difference between power conflict, she writes, and power over. She says abuse is when someone has power over you and is doing you harm, and you cannot avoid that harm. That's abuse. But if you if we're in a mutualistic space and we have conflict, that conflict is not by definition abuse. And just because you're upset at me for that conflict does not mean you're being abused. And I think it's hilarious because you know who's gotten canceled 7 times in the last 4 years by fucking tender queers is Sarah Schulman.
Sarah Schulman.
And I am not here saying that Sarah Schulman has never done a wrong thing or had a wrong opinion or anything else. What I'm here to say is that Conflict Is Not Abuse is an essential book, and essentially the people tried to cancel her for her opinion on X or Y. It's like you're not like your cancellation is undermined by her work, you know. And her book Gentrification of the Mind is like essential, like Sarah's work and her fiction, it's essential, you know. And so it's like not worth canceling her over your interpretation of her reaction to XYZ thing. It's actually much better to engage with her work, to engage with her ideas, to, if you feel comfortable, engage with her as a human being and realize that we're all in community and she has actually not abused you. If she has abused someone, I would like to hear from that person about what abuse has happened. And,
you know,
go.
Oh, no,
that's it.
I'm so sorry.
That's it.
I was just... So Sarah Schulman to me is like a patron saint of this podcast in a lot of ways. Like she's so many of her ideologies are like have transcended like decades of organizing. You know what I mean? Like, and to me, I feel like we're reaching a critical mass of this exact kind of behavior. We're like, it's hard to talk about because it makes us sound old, and it's hard to talk about because like it also sounds like kind of like Fox Newsy, like, you know, like, oh, the queers are so mad, like this fucking like it's kind of tough to platform. But like I think we as a podcast are we're really adamant about having an intra-communal conversation about this. And to me, Sarah Schulman is always having intra-communal conversations. She is always saying, here are where queer and trans people are not doing the reading. Like they're not, literally, she's like, this is how faggots have failed the movement. You know what I mean? Like she's always saying stuff like that. And those aren't conversations we always like to have, because when we have so much opposition on the right or whatever, however you want to frame it, like you don't want to kind of fight internally, but like but because we are already fighting amongst ourselves, it's worth it for us all to think about how we rectify that.
And my friend Chanda Prescott Weinstein says an incredible thing, which is just that you don't have to like someone at all to be to be in coalition with them, to build a movement or an event with them, to support a union together. You know, if a person's being harmful towards you, you're not obligated to work with them. But like this notion of like, oh, I can't build a movement because I don't like that person. You think the fucking right sits around being like, I don't like this or that CEO when they're fucking doing their evil lobbying and shit? No, they don't give a fuck. They want to get the fucking job done. And I think that sort of pragmatic, like movement building where you're like, not, and it's also just true. I think there's this notion in the queer community that we all have to like each other. But I don't have to like everybody.
No.
I don't like everybody. No. Not everyone likes me, you know? And that's actually fine. But I do feel like, you know, we can do good work together. If there are places where our work needs to intersect, just because you don't like me, you don't want to work with me, I mean, get a fucking life. Like, what we're facing is too big. We are facing erasure and social death. We are facing a fascist movement, and I think there's something important about coalition building.
Something that former podcast guest Dylan Marin always says is like empathy, having empathy for someone is not an endorsement of their belief systems. Like just because you have chosen to see someone's humanity, or just because you've chosen to like look at someone and say, you know what, at the end of the day, you are a human being, which is truly like the ethos of like almost any terrain of like movement work you can think of. Like we are human beings and our humanity is important. So like in order to quote unquote be embattled or to protest or to be in opposition to someone, you still do need to find their humanity or find like where they're coming from in order to, you know, figure out what your argument is or in the case of what Joe's trying to illustrate, how to work with them. You know what I mean?
It's also the baseline, right? So like just imagine how coalition building and how movements would work. And if we want to get sort of super into our political system, how the left would function if we actually took that as a baseline, as a foundation, as a foundational mode of thinking and built from there. Because I think that very often also what happens sometimes is that when we're like ultimately sort of on the same side sociopolitically, but we don't like each other, people want to feel justified in not liking folks. Mm. And so they'll call things harm. They'll talk about things as being problematic when really it's like, y'all just have a difference of opinion, or maybe y'all two just don't like each other. And you can still, as you all were saying, not like each other and still work together for the same cause. Lots of people work every day jobs with people that they do not like or do not care for, but they're on the same team, they've got the same goal, and they're able to work and have professional relationships. And so it's like, you know, you don't have to justify not liking someone. You can still work together.
I would like to ask the group a question, and this might put us in like hot water, and we maybe have to hashtag take this out. But how do you feel about the word violence?
I think that it is as capacious as the word harm, as capacious as the word trauma these days. I feel like we are loosey-goosey throwing things all around, like, and using them to our benefit. And I often feel that when I think it's a little less true now, but in 2020, or even preceding that, like, honestly, like, in the Trump era, like, we were using the word violence like it was toilet paper.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I've the word violence is something my bestie's dad is an old school Marxist. When I was in college and out of college, we met in college, he was a very strong advocate as violence as a valid method for advancing left-wing politics, which is an old-school Marxist. It's Mao, right? It's like the revolution will come at through the end of a gun. I mean, it's not a new idea. I think that's the thing that angers me about this whole conversation, is that, number one, these are not new ideas. When is violence permitted? What is violence? What is not violence? There's like, again, it's like, to me, it's like a lot of the queers not doing the reading and weaponizing the term to avoid accountability or to justify valid feelings of feeling bad. I mean, I believe Fanon when he says colonialism enacts daily violence on the colonized. I do believe that there is structural and systemic violence. I believe 20th century and 21st century scholars of race, class, and gender, when they say there is structural violence in our country, then the prison industrial complex is a form of enacted violence, whether or not it physically does harm in exactly X, Y, or Z ways. And I believe Malcolm X when he says structural violence can be countered with violence. I don't think that it's unfair to say, you know, violence is, you know, we can punch Nazis. It's not completely off the table. I just wish that people would come at it from these nuanced conversations that have been happening in leftist spaces for hundreds of years, as opposed to just saying, not using X pronoun is violence. Like,
part of what is so valuable, though, Joe, about what you just said, which I think makes a ton of sense, is that you talked about specific forms of violence just in that. You were like structural violence. And I think it's often like part of the key between what you and Fran are maybe talking about for me is like, I sometimes am a little bit suspect when people just throw around, oh, this is violent, that is violent, da 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 da. It's not to say that it's invalid, but I'm a little bit like, let me think about that. Let's parse that a little bit. But when you hear the term structural violence and you hear the term emotional violence, like if you can be specific about what the violence actually is in naming it, I feel like it just makes it a lot more, it gives it more of a base. It makes it sturdier to me to Inquisition.
I wonder sometimes if in the definition, and this is just me personally, so like I'm not espousing this as a belief, but it's like the difference between being yelled at by someone and being yelled at by someone you're afraid of.
I'm actually curious to go back to the conversation of feelings, because I think Joe, you know, and I will have like a particularly nuanced kind of idea on this, because I started with the Killing Eve example because there was a kind of weaponization of how certain people writing personal essays felt specifically betrayed, mm-hmm. or how they felt like this was a failure to the community. Mm-hmm. And when you said, Joe, like they had like, you know, people that have very valid feelings. It's like, that's important to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. Like the way you are feeling is valid and real. Like we're not discounting that or telling you that that doesn't have place in the conversation, but to take those feelings and to use them to structurally problematize something, mm-hmm. I think becomes very ishy territory, yeah. but I think drives a lot of people with very loud platforms around issues that really have no place in movement work. Like if you're trying to find liberation in like, you know, a lesbian TV show, like you will not find it. Like that's not where movement work is leading us.
I think we're getting a little conflated here on cultural criticism versus movement work. I think cultural criticism can be movement work, but it isn't so by definition. I also just think...
But the thing is, some people that... I didn't mean to interrupt. No. I'm so sorry. It's just that a lot of people think that cultural criticism is movement
Cultural work. Criticism can be, but is not by definition movement work. That I'm going to say that here as just... Point one, your little think piece is not necessarily movement work. And I think you have to name it as such if you want it to be. And if you name it as such, well, there's going to be a certain amount of accountability and work you have to do in the piece that you're probably not going to be doing in the piece for the little $150 and a 24-hour turnaround. That's that on that.
Period.
Number one, I'm doing a Joe Biden speech. Number one. Number two, is there a trope in literature that is harmful that has a gay side character and kills them off? Yes, there is. Is Killing Eve... How many seasons of Killing Eve did we have? We had 7 fucking seasons and there's queerness all throughout. And you're mad that a person who is a literal serial killer who has killed countless people through the course of the show got kills off? And you're going to call that a part of this trope? It's actually the show kind of evades all of the queer tropes that have existed. So maybe you're enforcing a trope yeah. that is not actually true to the show. You're not reading the show properly. You are reading the trope properly, but not the show. That's number two. Number three, I'm thinking really hard about a piece of work that I think talks about this beautifully with barely ever saying the word violence. And I just finished Chantal V. Johnson's Post-Traumatic.
Yes.
And I think one of the big things that the second half of that book talks about, it doesn't describe in detail any of the abuse that you know has happened to the characters, that is physical. There's a rape. There's a lot of physical harm, physical violence. But the scenes from her childhood that are described are almost there. They are a different type of neglect, a different type of, I would call it, violence. This child is being treated violently by their parents without being hit. And that, I think, is she wrote that so incredibly well. And the trauma that comes not just from being physically harmed, but from being emotionally harmed is real, real trauma that we have to work through. But that does not mean that every bad feeling you ever have is violence.
Hmm. Well wow. said.
That was really, wow, that was amazing,
but
Joe.
I also have to say that, like, a show doesn't owe you anything. Like,
because... I mean, that's a whole other conversation we should get into.
I know, but
I'm
just saying that, like, that's the thing about toxic fandom, which is like, oh, yes. Because I identify with this, it owes me fan service or it owes me something and I get what I want. And it's like, yeah, first of all, TV shows were invented to sell vacuum cleaners. Like, let's just be real yeah. about that. Like, yeah. the fact that anything gets made that's good is a fucking miracle, especially yeah. when you take into account how anesthetized fucking studio heads are and how they want to make everything its most boring version possible. To have anything made is a miracle. To have anything made good is double that. And just like... You just turned on your TV. Like, how much? It's not like you paid $15 to go into a theater and do this. Like, come on now. Like,
well, even that, I think this speaks, and this is poking a lot of things in my head that I talk about and coalescing them into yeah. this one idea. But it makes me think a lot about the American expectation of what art gives us. And versus like when I lived in France, where a movie ends sad or a show ends in a, like
yes.
purposely there's a whole
no
movement in like 60s and 70s French cinema that is specifically meant to, you are supposed to be annoyed and bored watching the entire film. And you are supposed to sit through the film and be annoyed and bored. And your expectation of the film home is explicitly denied. And I think as Americans, we have this expectation that I'm going to like the end. And I think, you know, not to, God, it's the straightest reference ever of all time. The end of Seinfeld does that beautifully, right? Everyone wanted this, like, wrapped up, tied in a bow end to an iconic series. And they basically were like, fuck you on that. We're going to do this weird, bizarre non-ending. And people hated it, right? So I think what Teebs is saying about what do we expect art to give us, oh, I feel bad or I feel upset because of a piece of art didn't end the way that I wanted it to. Yeah, it's fucking art.
Yeah, dude, it's like watch Chantal Akerman have a lady eating sugar in bed for fucking 20 minutes. And you're like, what is going on?
I mean, honestly, we're gonna have to do a whole other 2.0 on like representation in general, especially when it comes to like art and entertainment. But like, I think the reason I like, you know, we're like keep laddering back to it and why they're kind of always entwined is because like, right, in these specific instances, like a TV show is now beholden to an ideology it never subscribed to.
And
you know, toxic fandom and how we talk about that, yes, is something that has existed in eons, for eons. But because like people in the tender queer area or just like people that exploit social justice kind of like movement work in general have taken over so much space on the internet and have done so much to platform themselves. And because they speak so authoritatively and often on social media where there is no real room for nuance, that has created a kind of culture of fear in so many different corners of the world, wherein if we end a show where a lesbian dies, we now have to have the actors apologize, which they are. They are on press junkets, like having to try and justify the ending and trying to like work out like how this is like not quote unquote problematic, why this has no place. You know what I mean? It's just like kind of cuckoo bananas that these two completely separate fields of our lives have bled into each other in a way that just makes everything not fun. You know what I mean?
I did not realize they were actually apologizing.
They're not apologizing. They're having to answer to a lot of questions, and fans are calling for an apology. Like literally, fans have like written, you know, like change.org petitions demanding an apology from the group.
I think I just need to say one more time: think pieces are not movement work.
Period.
I'm feeling full, but like I could fit one more thing inside of me. Den knows how I feel.
Oh yes.
So, Dan, why don't you put the cherry on our top this week?
Okay, so this week's cherry on our top is one of my favorite shows that I rewatched for the first time since it went off the air in 2010, and that is Ugly Betty. So, for those who may not know, it's actually kind of wild the amount of time has passed. Ugly Betty premiered on ABC in 2006. So I was 20 years old. I was a junior in college when it premiered, and it was starring America Ferrera. And the whole concept is that it was based on this Colombian TV show produced by Salma Hayek and Silvio Horta. And the whole idea is that there's this sort of like very sort of messy, unattractive young Latina woman who's just out of college and whose dream is to be a magazine editor to eventually start her own magazine. And she ends up working as the assistant to the editor in chief of, you know, a sort of Vogue magazine knockoff called Mode magazine.
And it's as a telenovela, like a true, tried and true, absolutely wackadoodle, like soap opera. It's a very specific genre.
Betty LaFea, that was what
Betty
it was LaFea. Called.
Yes, Betty LaFea. And like high camp through and through. And so I loved this show. I watched it every single week for 4 years. And at the time, one of the things that was really exciting to me was that Betty's nephew is this character, Justin Suarez, who starts the show very young, very much like I think the character was like 11 or 12, like clearly a sort of musical theater show queen type kid who's, you know, represented that way, is very effeminate throughout the show, obsessed with fashion, very queeny and funny and clever. And eventually in the series does eventually come out. But we hadn't really seen representation before that I can think of like a young queer kid of color on TV. But the other thing that was really interesting that I almost forgot about actually until we started watching it, is that there's another character played by Rebecca Romijn, who's a trans woman. And she and I think there's a lot of problems in the way that she's, you know, presented in this show, including as a plot device. But I do keep thinking about the fact that this was 2006, and I'm not sure that there had ever really been a trans character featured on television, like mainstream television, up until that point. And so I think there, you know, and Rebecca Romijn is a cisgender woman, and so that's another complicated part of this. But it was really interesting rewatching it, because for me, one of the things I started remembering is that, like, I realized I might be trans when I was 18 years old, and I spent many, many years saying, no, you're not going to do that, you're not going to go there, that's too much, going to be too much for your family, they can't handle it, like, being gay is difficult enough, blah, 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 blah. And I'm realizing that, for me, at that age, that was, like, probably for quite some time, my primary sort of representation of transness and what it meant to be trans, and like and how that impacted the people around you. And so I've just been sort of wrestling with the impact of that, you know, given where I am now, and also the fact that, like, I mean I'm not at a fashion magazine, I'm at a literary journal, but I am professionally an editor, and an editor-in-chief is my title, and that was a thing in that show. And it's all just sort of swirling around in my head in a way that I haven't yet made sense of, that might produce an essay. But
I was just going to say, Dan, this sounds like a think piece.
Oh, no.
Do not degrade my deep thoughts by calling them a think piece. This is an essay.
This sounds like a think piece slash movement work.
Movement work. But the point is, ultimately, I still love the show. It brings me so much joy. There's incredible fashion in it. It's incredibly queer. It's really diverse as well. It also stars Vanessa Williams, who I would argue, actually, is... while canonically a cisgender character, as playing the character Wilhelmina Slater, that while she's canonically cis, I would actually argue, and we can go down this rabbit hole if y'all want, I would argue that she's actually more of a trans character and a better representation of transness in that series.
Well, I mean, that would certainly make me feel better about all the T slurs she had to say.
Listen, well, there were many. There were many. And I started thinking about that, too. I was just thinking about that, and I was like, why was that so okay then, and what did that mean? And I, you know, as a space that was trying to be trans-affirming, ultimately, I haven't worked it all out yet. I'm thinking about it still.
I also, like, feel like that was, like, around the time, like, Christian Siriano was on,
Christian Siriano.
On Project Runway, and everything was TTT, and it was like, and then, like, that would just be on Saturday Night Live, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, America's Next Top Model as well, preceding that, like, yeah, I've said this on the pod before. Ugly Betty is the number one reason I work in media, period. Like, she was the modeling of my personhood more than any other sort of representational figure I could ever think of. Like, she is everything to me. But, like, on the kind of, you know, how the show was very of its time, I think it's very telling how certain shows, when we know how they're problematic, or when we know how they kind of invoke violence or whatever, the shows that kind of transcend that are the ones that, like, champion, like, where the heart of the show is, which is around the idea of not belonging to something that you're going to forge through anyway. And I think that the fact that, like, all of my trans friends love Ugly Betty is, like, very telling, even though it's, like, a very kind of fucked up show when it comes to trans identity politics.
It's also a fucked up show for a very important reason that I must state explicitly. It's called Ugly Betty, and it stars America Ferrera, who is the hottest, erasure. It is hot person erasure.
She's so hot.
Oh my God. Dare they?
I'm watching We Crash on Apple TV. And it's such a terrible show. And America Ferrera is the only thing worth watching. And she, like, some of the scenes are, like, sexualized because she's so magnanimous and beautiful.
Oh my God.
To be fair, they did make Ugly Betty hot in, like, the latter half of the last season.
They did.
Like, she took off her braces and they, you know, made her hair straighter and, like, you know, gave her contact
lenses. She started wearing couture.
Like, all the things. Yeah, she started wearing couture. I was like, okay.
I remember to this day, my clearest memory of Ugly Betty was when Justin's dad stood up for him on the subway.
Yes, yes.
That, like, moment was so, I was inconsolable. I was just
softy teams.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Were you crying? Tender queer teams? Tender queer teams.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
To give a little bit of context, you know, so Betty's sister had a baby, Justin, when she was in high school, and she's basically been raising him as a single mother, although his father, I guess, is around and, like, maybe in the neighborhood. And they're kind of, like, starting to see each other again, and he's getting to know his son, Justin, and he's kind of being homophobic, like, through several kind of episodes. Like, he's being like, we don't want him to turn out gay, da-da-da-da-da. And they're going to see a Broadway musical, and...
Wicked.
They're going to see Wicked, yes. God, because that's the time that this was in. They're going to see Wicked. Their train gets stalled, their subway gets stalled underneath, you know, under the ground. And they're stuck there. And Justin's so sad that his dad is going to miss Wicked that he starts... Or no, it's Hairspray. It's Hairspray. Because he starts singing the first song of Hairspray. And... some, you know, asshole starts, like, you know, calling him names and being terrible, and his father just gets up and absolutely defends him and protects him in that space. And it's, like, it is a moment that every queer kid who, like, you know, was in a situation like that and maybe chose not to be ourselves in that situation because we knew what would happen and we didn't think we'd be protected. We all saw that, I think, and, like, wept. And yeah, it's maybe my favorite scene of the whole show.
I have next week's dessert. Do you all remember when we recorded in Greenpoint and we would leave on the train and we'd be on the G train going back to Manhattan and Den would be on the G train going to Queens and she would put in her headphones and do her figure skating routines full on with jumps and choreography across Den, you are that queen who just is herself on the subway. Anything else, be damned. Yeah. There was literal figure skating jumps across the G train platform.
That's true.
Well, I'm so overdue for an Ugly Betty rewatch, so let's do it, fam.
Yeah.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our home at Stitcher. Our producer is the talented Tagliolini, Alexandra De Palma.
Tagliolini? Tagliatelle? What is that word?
Subscribe, rate, and review us 5 stars on iTunes, or we sick the bussy bandit herself, Den Michelle, on you. I am Tommy.
You should only be so lucky.
I'm Tommy Teebs Pico. You can find me at Hey Teebs, HEYTEEBS, on Instagram because I deleted Twitter.
I'm Fran. You can find me at Fran Squishco anywhere you want. And please listen to my new show, Like a Virgin with Rosa Domu, anywhere you listen to podcasts.
I'm Joseph Osmondson. You can find me at www.josephosmondson.com, where, as always, you can pre-order my book, Virology, that comes out in only 2 months.
And I'm Den Michelle Norris, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Den Michelle, and follow my editorial pursuits at Electric Literature.
Find us on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read, and join us on Facebook and Twitter at Food for Thought Pod. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dicks to thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T.
Bye, babies.
Good job.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.